HGGS, us and them.
Hello everyone, welcome to HGGS podcast series Us and Them. Today we are going to record our first episode with Laura Herges.
Thank you, Sinan.
And since it's our first episode, we'd like to also talk about who we are, what are we doing, what's our goal, and also then start with the first interview with Laura on her topic of choice. But let's start. Who we are, Laura?
Yeah, again, thanks for having me as the first guest. So we are actually both HGGS members. And I joined in, was it September or October? I think it was like October of last year.
It depends. The application period that you have applied.
Yeah. So we are also both members of the organizing committee of this year's HGGS Summer Forum, which has the theme Us and Them. And then Sinan had the great idea to turn this theme also into a podcast. So about me, I am a PhD student in American Studies. My first year just came to an end in like February. And my theme that I write my thesis about is the so-called military entertainment complex. This is basically a cooperation between the American military and the entertainment industry. And I'm focusing on the branch that is the film industry. And so I write my thesis about films that were developed in cooperation with the American military that are about real life military operations abroad. And the films have to be released after 9/11. And as I said, they have to be based on real life occurrences. And basically, I look at how the films differ from what actually historically happened and how the military distorts the events in order to appear in a positive light.
That's great. A great summary from you, Laura.
Thank you.
But maybe first, before we delve into the specifics of this topic and the depiction of the American soldiers and also post-traumatic syndromes or like some kind of really controversial topics like torture, we also have to explain why we came up with the idea, Us and Them, as the overarching theme for our summer forum, which will take place on
June 27th, 2025.
How did this process actually work and how did we turn, came up with the idea of Us and Them, maybe some kind of really related with the topics of identity and identity politics? What was our motivation actually?
That's a funny story. So in our organizing team, we are, well, it kind of depends on the meeting, how many people we are. It's usually between 8 and 10 people.
Yeah.
And in the
ideal case, I have to just intervene there. But yeah, but we had a really great working team. And I'd like to, in this, yeah, using that opportunity, I'd like to thank all members of the organization team who were really enthusiastically work with us and also contributed a lot there. I have to admit that I didn't have such kind of experience with an organization. And the thing is, it's really tiresome sometimes and you have to deal with every small aspect of it. And we had a really great team to deal with every small kind of a problem.
I completely agree. So first of all, thanks to everybody who contributed to the success. Well, hopefully it turns into a success, our forum. And so the first session, the first time all of us met, what we did was everybody wrote down the topic of their PhD thesis. And then we just looked at all these topics and tried to come up with a theme, with a concept that kind of connects most of them. And Us and Them was what we ended up with at the very end of this process.
And we are really content with our topic of choice, actually, right?
Yeah, we got some great contributions. We've got some great presentations coming up in the forum.
And
so,
fanzine.
Also in the fanzine, yeah, people felt inspired by this topic, which is great for us.
And also, this podcast series is also one of the way to provide people a kind of an interview, like informal opportunity to express their feelings, express their ideas, and then also deep dive into their topic of choice. So we can also start with the official interview part. You already explained about your academic background, but maybe the one thing that was missing on that academic background was that. Why did you also interested in this topic?
Oh my God, that's a long story, but I'm going to start at the very beginning. So when I was a teenager, I listened to a lot of rock music and punk music. And one of the bands that I listen to is called Rise Against. I still listen to them to this day. And they always made very political music videos. And I remember I saw a specific music video when I was like 14 or 15, maybe. That's the video to a song called Audience of One. I recommend it to everybody. It's a great song. It's a great video. And the video is actually a metaphor on the Bush presidency. So it's basically a little kid who represents George W. Bush playing with plastic figures. And one part of that video alludes to the CIA torturing prisoners during the War on Terror, which I didn't understand at that age because I had never heard of that before. Like, we didn't talk about this in school. I didn't know about this at all. But since I was a really big fan of this band, I just went on their Wikipedia page and I read everything about them I could find. And then I went on the Wikipedia page of that specific song. And there was a link to another Wikipedia page about the CIA torture scandal. And there was one picture that has become really famous. The picture of the so-called hooded man. I don't know if you know it, Sinan. But
actually, I'm not. Could you maybe elaborate on that?
Yeah, so in 2004, pictures of tortured prisoners were leaked by a whistleblower. These pictures were not from a CIA prison. They were from a normal military prison called Abu Ghraib. I do not recommend looking these pictures up because they are horrific. But this one picture that became famous shows a man who is hooded. That's why it's called the Hooded Man. And he is standing on, I think, like a wooden box. And they basically told him, if you step on the floor, terrible things will happen to you. And yeah, the silhouette of this man just became really, really famous. Yeah, and I saw this picture. I was a teenager. I was so scared. And so I just closed that page and I never looked at it again. Until many, many years later, basically on September 11th, 2021, that was the 20th, it's a terrible word in this context, but the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And then a German news channel showed hours of documentary footage on 9/11 and the War on Terror. And I watched this for hours because I was so shocked that I didn't know anything about this topic, like, at all. I knew basically that two planes flew into the Twin Towers, and that was it. I knew that there was an Iraq war, obviously, but we never talked about any of this in school. I didn't see any of this on TV or anywhere. It's just a topic that's been so neglected, at least in my experience. And so I watched this documentary, and I couldn't believe all of this, and I was like, I gotta do something. I've got to, I don't know, write about this in a way. And that was actually close to when I had to decide on topic for my master's thesis. And since I've always been a big film fan, I already knew that I wanted to write about films in my thesis. And so I looked up films that were about the War on Terror. And I found a film that's still relatively new. I think it was released in like 2020. That's called The Report. And this film is about a small team of Senate staffers who had to write the so-called torture report. This is also something that happened in real life. When it was discovered that the CIA tortured prisoners, there was this small team in the Senate that had the task to write a report about this.
Did you like it? I mean, the film as in aesthetic way.
No, not really, to be very honest. Sure. Because so the thing that happened was when I watched the film for the first time, I noticed that in the middle of this film, they show the trailer to another film, and this other film is Zero Dark Thirty. That
is also our topic today.
That is one of our films that we're going to talk about today. Yeah.
For reference, the other film that we are going to talk about is The American Sniper. And maybe just a question, why did you choose actually these two films? What aspects of these films also were really critical on your project or on your talk right now?
Zero Dark Thirty is basically from the CIA's perspective. And this film was also supported by the CIA. Like, the film crew talked to CIA agents who were part of the mission to find Osama bin Laden and eventually kill him. And that's also what the film is about. And I chose this film both for my thesis, my master's thesis back then, but now also my doctoral thesis, and for this podcast episode, because it is just the essence of us and them for me, because it operates in this very black and white world where the CIA are the good guys and everybody who they tortured is an evil terrorist and deserves this. And the film also has this very problematic way of framing this as sort of a revenge for 9/11. From the very first minute, I think the film starts with calls that the victims who were in the Twin Towers made while they were collapsing, the towers were collapsing. And then the second scene you see is the CIA torturing somebody. So it's very much framed that way. And everybody in that film, as I said, who is tortured, is just a caricature of an evil terrorist. They have no characteristic traits. You don't learn anything about their motivations, their lives, nothing. They're all the same. They're all more or less anonymous. We know only the name of one of these people. And he's the worst in the film. Like, he's so unsympathetic. There is no good characteristic traits. And as a viewer, you don't even really feel sorry for him, which is a terrible thing because he's tortured in terrible ways. But since you're so much on the side of the CIA in that film, you can't really feel any kind of sympathy. And so back to my master's thesis, I made a comparison between the report and Zero Dark Thirty. And my thesis was basically that the report is meant as an answer to Zero Dark Thirty, to like be a more realistic portrayal of what happened to these people at the CIA black sites. Oh, black sites are the secret prisons, by the way. But at the end, both films were very much shaped by American exceptionalism. And although the report had good intentions of correcting what was shown in Zero Dark Thirty, at the end, it is still like, oh yeah, what the CIA did was bad, but America is still the best country in the world. And like, we learned from our mistakes and now we just go on being great. So that was my master's thesis. However, while I was writing that master's thesis, I discovered that Zero Dark Thirty was supported by the CIA and that this is a whole big system, which, as I said already, is called the military entertainment complex. And there are more than 2,500 films and TV shows produced that way, either with the help of the CIA or the Department of Defense. And like most people, I hadn't really heard about this at all. And so I was just like, okay, I need to do more about this. This is such a fascinating but also problematic topic, and I just need to write more about this. And as I said, Zero Dark Thirty, as well as American Sniper, which is the second film I want to talk about today, very clearly are shot from an American perspective. And they have this very simplistic, I think I already used the word caricature, way of showing the enemy, showing terrorists. And I think that's really interesting because American Sniper was in fact not supported by the military. And still, it has the same perspective, I would say, and applies the same techniques to frame this in a very pro-American, very uncritical way, which I find problematic because we all know Iraq did not possess weapons of mass destruction, but these things are just never addressed in American Sniper. And it's just very patriotic. It's a very, oh, the soldiers did all of these things to protect civilians to protect American lives, and that's what justifies that war. Yeah.
First of all, let me express that I feel really relieved that you just managed to make a rainbow out of your childhood traumas. I think, yeah, that's also a great inspiration for our listeners.
Thank you.
But maybe just taking a step backwards and also thinking about the famous phrase from the theorist Marshall McLuhan in the media culture and also media theory, like, the medium is the message. I'm not going to ask you to elaborate on that or whether it's true or not, but if we are also taking these two examples, Zero Dark Thirty and American Sniper, maybe we should also think about in this two specific examples, because there are two different distinct examples of one is based on the autobiography of a soldier, mm-hmm. that's the American Sniper, and yep. the other one is Zero Dark Thirty based on the CIA reports, actually, as it depicted. You already explained the Zero Dark Thirty and its relationship with the CIA reports, but maybe also could you elaborate on that? How does it make any difference that American Sniper was also based on an autobiography? And why were you also interested more in the cinematic way of depiction of the American soldiers, not the book, but more of a cinematic, in the cinematic experience that the audience have?
So American Sniper is based on the autobiography of Chris Kyle, who is the most lethal sniper in American history, or was, because he died in 2013, I think. And I thought it was so interesting how different the film is from the book. There are such crucial and very problematic parts that were not shown in the film. And I think when you read the autobiography and you watch the film, you will see two completely different men in Chris Kyle and the way Bradley Cooper portrays him in the film.
You think that was a conscious effort?
Yes. Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Yes. Because, so the director of the film is Clint Eastwood, and he used to be a very outspoken Republican. He's not anymore, but I think he still has the specific way of thinking, this very patriotic way of thinking, I would argue. And while patriotism plays a big role in both the book and the film, the book Chris Kyle, which is the real Chris Kyle because it's an autobiography that he wrote himself, has some very racist views. And he, for example, calls Iraqi people savages repeatedly. He talks about how much fun it was to kill people in Iraq. He also says at some point that none of the things he did were actually for the Iraqi people, that he did not give a damn about them, and that everything he did was just to protect Americans. He also at some point talks about going to heaven and God forgiving him for everything he did because he just did it to protect American lives, etc. And all of his views are like never shown like this in the film. And in the film, I think they turned this person, who, by the way, is a compulsive liar, or was a compulsive liar because he's been caught lying in public several times. And they turned this very problematic person into a saint, into a martyr who gives it all for his country. And I'm not trying to like diminish what he did in real life, because of course he sacrificed, for example, the happy relationship he had with his wife. Like, it's very clearly addressed in the autobiography as well that they had marital problems. So he did sacrifice that to go to Iraq four times, obviously. But in the film, all the problematic parts are cut out, and the only thing that's left is his sacrifice. The part about the compulsive lying, I just wanted to go a bit more into detail about this, because,
sure.
For example, there was one incident where he talked about, like in an interview, he talked about how after Hurricane Katrina, he went to New Orleans to help the people there. And then he saw a couple of people looting a store, and he said that he shot one of them. And this never happened. And in another interview, he also talked about how he went to a gas station and then somebody tried to rob him there. And then he shot that person. And this also never happened.
But it doesn't align with the reality, right? How it is depicted in the film.
No, in the film, he's just this very ideal, very virtuous person who only wants to protect civilians. Like, that's his whole deal. Like, he just wants to protect others. This is also made clear from one of the very first scenes, which is a dialogue with his father when he was a kid. And the father says something like, there's three types of people in the world. There's wolves, sheeps, and sheepdogs. And the task of the sheepdogs is to protect the sheep. And it's very clearly an allusion to him later being in the Navy and protecting civilians, as I said. And this is all we have from his character. He's just this very ideal, perfect version of Chris Kyle, which in real life did not exist like that.
Well, then the question is, are we also competent enough to differentiate between what is propaganda or what really does not align with the reality? Or we just accept the facts that we also see in the film as it is? Is it possible to have this critical view without having without reading all these articles, scientific articles or media critics? And can we also just have this critical view without any prior knowledge? Or maybe just a follow-up question. Are the films that effective, that powerful, so that they can change our perception of the American war or American experience? Not just American, but in general, maybe.
It's very subjective if we are actually able to view the events in the films in a critical way, although they are portrayed differently in the films than they were in real life. Because, I mean, both films also show negative parts. In American Sniper, as I said, it's the marital problems and the PTSD that Chris Kyle suffers from, which, by the way, the PTSD is not, I mean, it's addressed in the book, but like very, very briefly. And in the film, it plays a much bigger role. And as I said, I think that's part of the conscious effort to turn him into this martyr American icon. So there are negative aspects in American Sniper and in Zero Dark Thirty, obviously, also because you see the CIA torturing people. And in both cases, when these films got reviewed by film critics and audiences alike, there was this whole debate for American Sniper. Like, is this a pro-war film? Is this a propaganda film?
And misses the point, right?
Yeah, because people were like, no, this is not a pro-war film because it shows PTSD. But it's still a pro-patriotism film. And it's still a film that distorts how we should talk about what happened during the War on Terror. Because the perspective is just very distorted. The perspective is, oh yeah, we've got this heroic soldiers who sacrificed everything to protect us. But we don't talk about what happened to the Iraqi people, what happened to the people in Afghanistan. We don't talk about the lie of the weapons of mass destruction, which, by the way, in the book, Chris Kyle also says something like, oh, the media just got wrong what weapons of mass destruction meant, because the media just focused on like atomic bombs. But actually, Iraq had chemical weapons that could also be called weapons of mass destruction. And all these critical parts are just left out. And we have this very, very strong focus on the sacrifice of like soldiers, or in the case of Zero Dark Thirty, on the sacrifice that the CIA agents made. And what I wanted to say as well is, in the case of Zero Dark Thirty, there is also a study that was conducted by Michelle Pautz. That's written Pautz. And she showed, so she had two groups of college students, and one group was shown the film Argo with Ben Affleck, and the other group was shown the film Zero Dark Thirty. And the goal was to find out whether these films improve the opinion that these college students had on the CIA because they viewed those films. And in the case of Argo, the overwhelming majority got a better opinion of the CIA, but then you don't see the CIA torturing people in that film. However, the other group also had an improvement in their opinion on the CIA. Not as big as the people who saw Argo, but not one single person had an opinion that was worse than before seeing Zero Dark Thirty. So these films do make a difference, in my opinion. And I think it's interesting that these people were college students, because I think young people are the group that are most in danger of being manipulated by these films, because they were not around when the war on terror happened. And so they have no firsthand knowledge of what actually happened. And to be very honest, if I see a film in cinema that is based on historic events, no matter whether it's the war on terror or something else, I don't always do my research afterwards. So when you go to the cinema and you see these films and you're like, I don't know, 18, 19 years old, and you're not interested enough in the topic to do your research afterwards, in my opinion, you will just believe what happens. And I think the fact that they also include critical parts, that they also include negative parts, like the torture of prisoners, like the PTSD, increases their perceived authenticity. Yeah.
Yeah. And also you mentioned two other films, apart from the Zero Dark Thirty and also American Sniper. Mm-hmm. They were also The Report and Argo.
Yes.
And these films are all came up actually after the war and the terror era. Mm-hmm. So what is the difference between the American propaganda that we see before the war and terror era, before 9/11, as we call it, and how the discourse has changed with the war and terror? What's the implicit message that these films may be in common, maybe separately, trying to give us, maybe in terms of how the torture would be a beneficial one for in order to get the information or not, like the ticking bomb example, and also the PTSD syndrome, and how the American society should manage the us and them between the American soldiers who served in Afghanistan or Iraq and the others, the, I would say in parentheses, normal ones who didn't serve and has nothing to do with the war, actually, just going on with their daily lives. Can we have a historical changing point with the war and terror era in terms of how the American soldiers are depicted in this film, in terms of torture and PTSD?
That is a very good question, and I might not be able to fully answer that yet, because it's also part of my PhD project, and as you know, I just started like a year ago. However, I do think we have a turning point in a way of respectively justifying war crimes, I would say. As I said, with Zero Dark Thirty, the whole narrative is like, oh yeah, we did really bad things, but we had to do them to protect the American people. And then with American Sniper, it's kind of the same thing. Yeah, like bad things happened. Not everything in Iraq was good, but we had to do it to protect the American people. And something else I wanted to talk about briefly is another turning point, maybe, after the Vietnam era. Because if we talk about PTSD, this was something that the military regarded as a taboo for a long time. So, as I said, American Sniper was not supported by the military, but there are films that were supported by the military that do show PTSD. And for a very long time in the past, this was actually not the case. I want to talk about a very specific example briefly, because I find this so interesting. After World War II, there was a documentary that the Department of Defense actually wanted to come out. So they wanted to produce this documentary. They searched for a director for this. And the documentary is called Let There Be Light. It's from 1946. And this documentary shows veterans coming back from World War II. And they are being treated at a hospital for their symptoms of PTSD. And
just let me say that there's also a great video of George Carlin, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Discusses these differences between how do we call this post-traumatic syndrome, post-war traumatic syndrome, sorry, and also how the world has changed from that point on after World War One,
right,
shell shock to the post-traumatic, post-war traumatic syndrome.
So yeah, in this film, you see people having very severe symptoms, like one guy can no longer speak without stuttering. One guy lost the ability to walk, and you see people going through therapy, breaking down, crying. It's very severe. And it was too severe for the Department of Defense, because they saw this and then they decided to not have this film released. And it only came out in 1980, which is more than 30 years later. And I've got my own little theory about why it came out in 1980, because PTSD started to be taken more seriously in the 1980s. Actually, in the same year, in 1980, it was officially recognized as a disease. And then in the 1980s, we also see a shift in these films that were supported by the military. Because as I said before, PTSD was a taboo topic. However, the film that changed everything afterwards was Top Gun, which, as most of you know, came out in the 80s. And that film shows PTSD because Maverick, the protagonist, he loses his best friend in a flying maneuver and he feels guilty for the death of him. And so you see him having a mini panic attack when he tries to get back into his jet. You see him arguing with colleagues, having angry outbursts and not being able to fly any longer. However, I call this PTSD light because you only see some symptoms. And PTSD is a huge topic among veterans. In fact, every single day, 17 American veterans attempt suicide.
That's a really, really great number.
That's terrible, actually. Yeah, but these films would never show this. You would never see a protagonist in danger of harming themselves in a film that was supported by the military. And so it's just a very unrealistic portrayal of PTSD. And I think that this type of PTSD shown in those films is also shown in those post 9/11 films in a way. As I said, American Sniper was not supported by the military, but I think it's the same kind of PTSD that's shown in that film. Like, you see Bradley Cooper playing Chris Kyle having some symptoms of PTSD. You even see him talking to his therapist briefly, very briefly. But then at some point, it's just not addressed again. And it's actually the same in the book. Like, he mentions at some point that he went to therapy, but it's like very briefly. And yeah, you just don't really grasp that it might be a bigger problem that will not be cured over the course of like a couple of therapy sessions.
Well, I don't know if it will be possible to change the mood a bit, but yeah, maybe just as a more methodological question, just going back to this Methodenstreit, or the relationship between the researcher and the topic. And we have to also agree that the topic that you are discussing right now and also giving your time and effort in every day is a really, I would say, disturbing one.
Mm-hmm.
And also could be detrimental for the researcher sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one aspect. And the second aspect could be that you may also feel something against these atrocities or these topics, so that it's also really hard to stay objective when you are approaching
mm-hmm.
these themes. Do you feel any difficulties when you are dealing with these kind of controversial topics, or when you are reading the reports of the PTSD or torture, and how do you deal with that? I promise that will change the mood. It changed the mood a bit, but yeah, it didn't turn up that well.
At the beginning, it was difficult for me, to be very honest, but that was before I started really doing research in an academic context about this topic. Like, when I talked about how I watched the 4-hour documentary on September 11th, 2021, and that really did something to me. I got really angry and yeah, also a bit sad that I didn't know about these things and that they were seemingly just ignored, accepted by society. But I feel like at this point I've just learned to personally distance myself a bit from this topic. And also, I think in a way it's also good that I had this response to it, because it motivates me to do something to inform people about these things and to start conversations about a topic that, in my opinion, has been neglected in society in general, but also academically, to be very honest. And what was the second question again? I'm sorry.
Can
I stay objective?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, about films that were supported by the military, I can see that there are also positive aspects about it. Like, the military will also make sure that, for example, the right kind of weapon is used, the right kind of, I don't know, tank is used. So for historical accuracy, on the technical part, they do have attention to detail. But when it comes to, like, the historical part of what actually happened, that is a different story.
Do you sense a change in the discourse right now? Maybe in the USA?
You mean on the war on terror? Or
on the war on terror, and how the people are approaching these kind of topics in terms of, are they more critical as we compare it with the situation like 10 years ago? Or is there a more humanitarian way of dealing with these kind of topics?
I feel like social media plays a role in people actually becoming more critical, which is a good thing. Because, for example, a new film just came out, and I don't know yet whether it was supported by the military or not, but it's also a film about the Iraq War. It's called Warfare, and I think the screenwriter is also an Iraq veteran. And I already saw some posts on Blue Sky, I think, of somebody being like, oh yeah, that's the new Iraq propaganda movie. So people do become more critical, or at least there is more attention to these critical aspects of these historically accurate or, well, inaccurate films. I haven't seen Warfare yet, but I really want to at some point. When it comes to film crews cooperating with the military, it's kind of a mixed bag, to be very honest, because in some cases, film producers would just not be able to make certain films without the support of the military. So it is a necessity, in a way, for many film productions, especially if you're like a young independent producer who does not have all the resources in the world like Clint Eastwood did for American Sniper. So it can be a good thing if you get the support and you don't need to buy a tank and you don't need to build a set that looks like a military base, which is crazy expensive, obviously. At the same time, they will be able to change your script and they will be able to change scenes, change dialogues, cut things out that they see in a critical way. And so it is an advantage to get the support. At the same time, it's a disadvantage for your critical way of portraying the military.
Yeah, thank you, Laura. Actually, we are coming at the end of our podcast. Maybe a last personal question to you. If you were not writing about this subject, what would be your choice of topic? What are the other important issues that you see maybe in the discourse or maybe in general? What would you be doing actually if you weren't spending your time on this topic?
Oh my God. So I'm a huge cultural studies fan, so it would definitely also be in that area. Something I love are musicals, and I've actually been thinking that at some point maybe I'm going to write a paper about the American musical and, like, maybe, I don't know, cultural differences between American musicals and, like, German musicals or, like, British musicals, whatever.
It's totally different,
yeah, but I'm obsessed with many, many musicals. Rent in particular. Rent is my favorite one. Have you seen it?
Actually, I haven't.
Oh, you should at some point. So, it's a great musical.
One of the big French musicals, yeah. But yeah, we hope that also we will be able to, in the future, maybe read your paper about the musicals and differences between American ones and the German ones, maybe?
That would be amazing. I would love that.
Sure. Yeah, thanks, Laura, for this insightful interview, and we will see you again in our next episode. So, thanks for listening.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.
Bye.